And up next on the stream of free radio at freakradio.org, it's me and you and the show I call Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the March 28, 2019 edition. 2 hours of fun and frolics, actually a lot of me talking, lots of interviews, examination of the struggle to save the Ross Camp folks in the sense that they are currently out there right behind the Gateway Plaza shopping center area, and they're about to be threatened with a kind of a wholesale deportation to nowhere, masquerading as, of course, compassionate assistance to shelter services, when in fact the shelter services simply don't exist for even for the people out there, much less for the entire homeless community. Something kind of that's been half-assed acknowledged by the Well, it's been acknowledged by some members of the city council, essentially denied by the staff who claims they have the shelter to accommodate folks as of April 17th, and that date has been moved up to really to April 10th in the terms of when the people are going to be, quote, encouraged to move out of the Ross camp. But there's counter stuff happening, too, and then we're going to be talking about that. There's a community meeting coming up at 7 o'clock on April 3rd. I think it's the third, let's see, first, second, third. Yeah, it's Wednesday night of next week at the Resource Center for Nonviolence when the Ross Camp folks will be meeting the community and people will be gathering to try to figure out a proper resistance to any kind of premature attempt to destroy people's homes and community with phony claims that there's going to be places for people to go when there aren't. This, of course, is really very typical of how homeless encampments are destroyed in city after city without any adequate alternatives. And I'll be discussing that, and you'll be able to hear it, and you'll be able to comment on it at that meeting. And also, if you've got comments on this show and you want your comments aired on the air, as I mentioned to the community when there was a recent council meeting a couple of days ago, you can give me a call at 831-423-4833. 831-423-4833. That's the number for this particular radio show, which isn't really on the radio and the air right now. We're on the stream, but we're a long-standing broadcast regularly, which has been on the air, which hopes to be on the air again, and which solicits your attention, your involvement, and your action. That's really what I try to do. So stay tuned, and we'll see if that happens.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's jump in and begin with a film called Seattle is Dying, which I haven't seen. I've just seen clips of it. However, I kind of know the narrative. I heard it full and up close at the city council meeting, two city council meetings, one last Tuesday and one the week before that, by people who were apparently very moved and upset and vitalized by the film, which is essentially a description of the homeless situation in Seattle as being essentially a big drug-induced problem caused by the lack of strong policing and the enabling of homeless people through respecting their constitutional rights, and through suggesting that you have to treat them like human beings who have the same rights as people in housing, instead of, quote, intervening, putting them in programs, jails, moving them away from residential areas to protect the children, this kind of claim that they're a danger to the community. And really, it seemed to move the group that wanted to stop, and apparently has stopped, although it hasn't been officially ratified yet by the council, the Depot Park dusk to dawn so-called safe sleeping area, which is sort of the city council's Band-Aid excuse for eliminating the Ross camp, beginning on April 10th and concluding on April 17th if they proceed to do it, which I think is not only immoral and abusive, but preposterous, considering what the results will be. As I said, at the council meeting, people streaming into the community just all over the city because their own community is going to be destroyed and bulldozed because it doesn't aesthetically please the folks who are our city mothers and fathers, actually the city council cowards and the staff who are running this essentially look good for tourists, reassure the neighbors kind of situation, independently of any real fundamental concern or respect for the rights and needs of folks outside. What I'm going to do first is play you a tiny clip of the Seattle is Dying news special, which is, I guess it was originally published by, or presented on the TV by KOMO, which I haven't watched. I'm not from Seattle, so that's probably why I haven't. But it'll give you a taste of what it's about. You can find it online, and you can view it yourself. But then I'm going to read you a critique of it, and we'll kind of take it from there.
Seattle is Dying. It's a harsh title, to be sure. Dark. In the end, I went with it because I believe it to be true. I believe that Seattle is dying, rotting from within. The program isn't about demonizing those who struggle with addiction and homelessness. Nothing could be farther from the truth. Instead, we ask the question, why aren't we doing more? Why don't we have the courage to intervene in lives that are, in the face of a grave sickness, reeling out of control? And we give voice to the people who you haven't heard from. Parents who are afraid to take their children to parks. Police who don't feel they're being allowed to enforce our laws. Citizens who don't feel protected anymore. Don't feel like they have a voice. This program is a reminder, in case we've forgotten, that this is not normal. This isn't the way it has to be. This is not right.
And, of course, there are video images of people who are homeless. One guy stretched out on the sidewalk. Then apparently it looks like a junkie possibly nodding out. Garbage along a stretch of land. And police cars lined up with their red lights and the red and white, blue lights flashing. And then we have, this is actually, this movie I think was made, or at least it's narrated, by a guy called Eric Johnson of KOMO-TV. And now it's, well, here's some of the critique. And this is a critique by Charles Mudded. And it was done March 18th, about 10 days ago. And here's what he's got to say. The local iteration of Trump TV, also known as KOMO, recently aired in an hour-long news special attempting to offer an examination of Seattle's homeless crisis that's as sober as possible. To make sure the viewer is sufficiently alarmed, it is called Seattle is Dying. This city, with a GNP or GDP of over $250 billion and a corporate community with a market capital value that's over $2 trillion, is experiencing nothing less than its final days. It has one foot in the grave. The problem? KOMO believes that it's a lack of dick-hard policing. Seattle law enforcers are powerless. Or to use the sexually charged wording of a cop who's interviewed in the special, impotent. One shot shows bike cops unable to do a damn thing about Rastafarians sitting on a park bench. The Liberal City Council and that jaw, and not jaw, is protecting them from Babylon's oppressors. The consequence of this limp-dick policing is that the productive members of society can't get a break and take their kids to the parks, and one supposes their dogs as well. The 206 actually has more hounds than snotty noses, and citizens no longer feel safe. The, quote, news, unquote, special gives a voice to these apparently unheard-of people. At one point, I guess he means unheard people, at one point, an interviewee, the owner of a bouncy house business, damn near breaks into the opening lines of The Message by Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. Broken glass everywhere, people pissing on the stairs, you know, they just don't care. I can't take the smell, I can't take the noise. Seattle today, according to Trump TV, is just as bad as New York City was back then in the late 1970s, those dark, dark days when the Big Apple was told to drop dead. Now let's get serious. Back in the 1990s, linguist Noam Chomsky described mainstream media as a complex of organizations that manufacture consent. But it also manufactures a specific and clearly irrational set of social feelings. One such feeling is a hatred for the poor. In a world that is not inverted, the opposite would be normal. A publicly spirited media would never fail to manufacture a hatred for the rich and view the endless accumulation of money as, to use the words of the most influential economist of the first half of the 20th century, John Maynard Keynes, a disgusting morbidity, one of those semi-criminal, semi-pathological propensities which one hands over with a shudder to the specialists in mental disease. The thing one should always wonder at, and in this wonder appreciate the enormous power of consensus building, is that this kind of behavior, hungering for more money when you already have too much of it, is not designated as semi-criminal in our world, but its very opposite. The victims of this semi-criminal, or just outright criminal, otherworldly passion for money, are totally normal. And so the concentration of massive amounts of socially produced wealth in the hands of a few and elite, and yes, very white, Seattleites, is not seen for what it is, criminal. But the visibly extreme poverty imposed on thousands of people, yes, many of whom are people of color, is. Not having access to a culturally based standard of living is breaking the law. What does this tell us? That the manufactured hatred of the poor justifies a perverted world that criminalizes the condition of poverty. Please give this a moment of thought. It's not as obvious as it seems. It's downright bizarre. It should astonish you in the same way that the sight of an elephant flying with its ears would. What's truly fantastic is that no one's throwing cuffs on the hands of the maddest members of the city, the Bezosis or the Schultzes, and locking them up in an insane asylum. I guess he's talking about some rich, powerful people in Seattle. In this, our perverted world, what's abnormal is not obscene wealth, but its consequences. In one moment of Seattle is dying, a camera mounted on a drone rises from the human filth on a hill and slowly turns to the towers of tech, municipal, and financial power. In this inverted, perverted KOMO world, the shock is not that the business district is right next to a homeless camp, but that a homeless camp is right next to the business district. There is an important difference between the two perspectives. In the second, the camp of misery is not about the city killing many of its people, but extremely poor people killing an affluent city. Now that is rich. And that's a brief commentary by Charles Tundere Meded, the Stranger's film editor. Apparently this is a website called The Stranger. He's a Zimbabwean-born cultural critic, urbanist, filmmaker, college lecturer, and writer who collaborated with the director Robinson DeVore and so forth and so on. Number of films, written for a number of publications. Now, that was a little dense, actually, and here's an article by Catherine Hinrichsen, March 20th, on Crosscut, which is a little more accessible. In just 30 seconds, the promotional video for KOMO TV special manages to cram in at least 10 invasive, voyeuristic, incendiary images of people in crisis on the streets of Seattle. After the requisite swooping scenes of tents and garbage along the freeway, it ended with the ominous title, Seattle is Dying. Given that introduction, the one-hour special that aired March 16th on the local ABC affiliate owned by Sinclair Broadcasting Group sounded like a must-miss, a sensationalized spree of fear and hate-mongering. I planned to avoid it. But on the Monday morning after it aired, I had a chance encounter with a colleague in a downtown crosswalk. She encouraged me to watch it because it's so bad. When I watched it later that morning, I couldn't help but yelp in frustration throughout the show. When people complain about tents and garbage in Seattle, I wonder whether they're bothered more by having to look at these visual signs of our community's failure or whether they actually care about the adults and children who live in those tents. The KOMO special by reporter Eric Johnson definitely appeals to the I don't want to have to look at the homelessness viewer. It's a call to punish rather than help people in need, and it seeks to divide them into the real homeless or the deserving poor and all the others. It's all the more disappointing given Johnson's reputation as a journalist. Yes, we need to focus on public safety and public health. We should be able to walk around our thriving city without harm. Small business owners should be able to operate in a climate that allows them to flourish. Police should be able to do their job of protecting the public. Kids should be able to play in parks free of needles. But at a time when our region needs to come together on solutions, KMO's program is a drastic, distorted, and divisive step backward. And I would kind of interrupt, sort of like the Depot Park deplorables' arrival at City Council and their rage at the council, not because they've chosen Depot Park, but really because they've chosen any kind of solution for letting homeless people camp in a community together in Santa Cruz. Anyway, continuing with this article by Catherine Hinchinson. Here is what I find most objectionable about it, she writes. The Seattle is dying journalist Johnson appears to have started with a foregone conclusion, then set out to find sources to confirm it. There are no interviews with city officials, nor with people in government who manage the homelessness system. He doesn't talk to people working for nonprofits, who could have told him about proven programs like Housing First and Permanent Supportive Housing. And actually, I would probably disagree with her. I think these are token programs, but again, I'm not that familiar with Seattle. But I would think, generally speaking, this attempt to masquerade granting funding to Housing First programs is, it's been utterly insufficient, has to do with a cover for and an attempt to placate a nervous constituency that sees homelessness growing and doesn't want to see it anymore and also feel some compassion about it. But the Housing Now rhetoric has been all over Santa Cruz for a decade, led by sort of poverty pimp maestros like Don Lane, former council member, former mayor. And I say poverty pimp not so much because he makes a lot of money off of poverty. I don't think he does. But for years, it's been his shtick to be on boards of places like the Homeless Lack of Services Center that don't really provide services or provide increasingly less services to people, and that increasingly go along with the narrative of criminalize the homeless. I mean, the Homeless Lack of Services Center with its gated area, its ID checks, its elimination of meals for the broader community, its exclusionary policies, and supposedly its bogus pathway to housing is simply a hoax because there isn't housing for this pathway. And what it was originally before the last decade or two, it was a place established for homeless folks to go as a sort of a day center, or initially to get a free meal, which now they can't even get a free meal at. You can only get into that if you are giving them a grant from part of your check from the government, or you're part of a program that this center can be funded through the government for. And in any case, hence my nervousness about Housing Now, my criticism of Housing Now programs and so forth, not because I don't think housing isn't important, but because it's usually just simply a device for ignoring the reality that the real housing homeless people have are in camps right now. That's just where they are. and they need to be supported where they are right now until changes can be made of a fundamental nature in the society, if that ever happens. Continuing, however, with this critique of the Seattle is dying, which is important because it's filled the minds and gotten into the bile systems of lots of Santa Cruzans who came to City Council this Tuesday and the Tuesday before. The program conflates homelessness, that's the Seattle is Dying program, with drug use, mental illness, and crime, and attempts to paint a few individuals as representative of our entire homeless population. For example, there's a statistic that property crime is up, and Johnson insinuates without proof that it's because of homelessness. There's also an attempt to brand people who are homeless as violent. Crosscut's David Croman found that people who are homeless are disproportionately arrested and booked by the Seattle Police Department, similar to what's happening in Santa Cruz, and was used as a justification for this task force on public safety of some years ago, created by the mendacity of Deputy Chief Steve Clark, Chief Kevin Vogel, and the police department generally, which, though it now has this, I think, largely illusory, compassionate face Police Chief Andy. He's Chief Mills is really continuing intensive police policies wherever there's any kind of complaints from merchants or residents, which I think he disputes. But when we try to hold him to account, for example, to instruct his officers not to go after folks in RVs just because somebody says, oh, they've been there for 72 hours, unless the person actually has been parked in an RV or a vehicle for 72 hours, not that they have any place else to park, mind you, in the city, because they don't, generally. There's no legal spots, really, if someone wants to complain about it, because the police will come out. Instead of advising the complaining neighbor, housed, privileged housed person, look, you can't make a false complaint, because that's what we hear has been happening. You can't make a false complaint because you think you're nervous that there's somebody parked in front of your house in a public space. That itself is a crime. It's a misdemeanor to make a false complaint. You're claiming they've been here for 72 hours when they haven't, and Andy Mills, the chief, claims he has ways of knowing this. He's made that claim publicly in a press conference he had in a debate with Alicia Kuhl, an RV owner, an RV person who claimed to be repeatedly harassed by someone who Mills has celebrated as a great police officer, Joe Habe. In any case, homeless people, and we've been trying to show this at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, are really either circumstantially disproportionately attacked, arrested, cited, moved along by police using a series of laws that were created for that purpose and indeed supported by police for that purpose. Can't sit down next to a building. You can't sit down within 14 feet of all kinds of things along Pacific Avenue. Again, the attempt to monopolize the public spaces for the tourist trade or for the convenience of people who find the look of homeless people something they don't want to see, or the look of countercultural people for something they don't want to see, for instance. Anyway, continuing with the story, Crosscut's David Croman found that people who are homeless are disproportionately arrested and booked by the Seattle Police Department. According to Croman's reporting, 1 in 5 jail bookings are of people experiencing homelessness. But the majority were for nonviolent crimes, including failure to appear in court. Conversely, Johnson profiles a man who assaulted a woman in SeaTac, an extreme example, but this is used as typical. We already know we have a woeful lack of mental health services here. Drug addiction, which can be a cause or result of homelessness, is a nationwide epidemic, not a Seattle-only problem, and it affects people with homes, too. Homelessness is decreasing nationally, but rising in cities where rents are too expensive. Of course, that's true here in Santa Cruz. But facts don't matter in this program, because instead we hear lively stories from the two people with lived experience who talk to Johnson, the young man who uses meth and reacts delightedly to hearing that he's on a list of the most frequent offenders, the woman who says 100% of people on the street are addicted because everyone she knows is. It's just similar to people who think that here in Santa Cruz that all the people in Ross Camp are addicts. The program consistently dehumanizes people who are homeless, gratuitously and needlessly showing faces of those experiencing traumatic mental health or medical crises in public, calling them wretched souls, living like animals, in filth and degradation. It's unconscionable. Language like this causes a physiological reaction that inhibits our humane response to people who are homeless. Johnson says he doesn't seek to demonize people, yet he actually refers to one person as, quote, consumed by demons. The KMO Seattle is Dying narrative suffers from the everywhere else does it better than we do syndrome. Johnson ignores our local progress, such as reducing family, youth, and veteran homelessness. He and his team travel to Rhode Island to devote a long chunk of the show to the successful prison-based medication-assisted treatment program. Had he sent his drones over the South Lake Union instead, he would have found permanent supportive housing programs like 1811 East Lake, a national model for alcohol treatment. Had he looked toward Belltown, these are places in Seattle, of course, I imagine, he might have found the respected law enforcement-assisted diversion program, which diverts people involved in low-level drug offenses to services. And again, we're talking about programs that I'm not terribly enthusiastic about, at least I imagine the Santa Cruz equivalent, but we don't even really have the meaningful equivalent. The notion of all these 10-year programs to end homelessness, throwing lots and lots of money in their direction, but not in any way really helping the people who are currently homeless out there to survive on a day-to-day basis, which is what they need, is really outrageous. But typical and standard, not just in Santa Cruz but elsewhere, but we live here, and this is where we have to address these issues. Johnson ignores the root causes of homelessness, both systematic and situational, the high cost of housing and wages that don't keep pace. Hello, Santa Cruz. Lack of health, mental health, and addiction services. Hello, Santa Cruz. Our regressive tax system. Generations of racial discrimination, and hello, Santa Cruz, and long-term cuts in public housing, to name a few. Johnson criminalizes homelessness. His solution to the problem is enforcement and treatment, which on the surface may sound logical, but make no mistake, he is saying that the thousands of people who should be locked away, the people who are homeless should be locked away, because he then suggests spending our region's entire annual homelessness budget on turning McNeil Island, a remote confinement center for sex offenders, into a giant prison with drug treatment. I live in the beautiful city, the same beautiful city as Eric Johnson. But because I work on homelessness every day, I experience it differently. I hope that there's still a lot of work to do, though there is a lot of work to do. We can solve homelessness when business, academia, nonprofits, the faith community, funders, government, and more come together. Well, this woman has a lot more faith than I do. And again, this whole notion of solving homelessness instead of simply addressing where funding is going to poverty pimpery these days and where people are being thrown into jail for simply being in public spaces, and until you address these basic issues and refunnel the money to those people, if that's what you want to do, you get it to them and not to people who are making a living off of them, such as I suspect Catherine Henriksen, who wrote this article, but who's saying some true things anyway. It's discouraging, she concludes, that KOMO did not look hard enough to see that there's more to the story than what's visible on the streets of Seattle. And it's not just discouraging. It's really enraging and depressing to hear the Santa Cruz City Council's oral communication session, which I'm going to play some of, probably not much of tonight, but certainly more of in the longer show I do on Sunday, assuming that I rev myself up to do it.
of a long, long walk when a man crawled out of a cardboard box under the E Street Bridge, followed me on to it. I went out halfway across with that homeless shadow tagging along, so I dug for some change. Wouldn't need it anyway. He took it looking just a bit ashamed. He said, you know I haven't always been this way. I've had my moments, days in the sun moments. I was second to none moments when I knew I did what I thought I couldn't do. Like that plane ride coming home from the war that summer, my son was born. Memories like a coat so warm the cold wind can't get through. Looking at me now, you might not know it, but I've had my moments. Well, I stood there trying to find my nerve, wondered if a single soul on earth would care at all, miss me when I'm gone. That old man just kept hanging around, looking at me, looking down. I think he recognized that look in my eyes. Standing with him there, I felt ashamed. I said, you know I I've had my moments, days in the sun moments. I was second to none moments when I knew I did what I thought I couldn't do. Like the day I walked away from the wine for a woman who became my wife, in love that when it was right could always see me through. Looking at me now, trash can fire tonight, that old man tells his story one more time. He says, I've had my moments, days in the sun moments. I was second to none moments when I knew I did what I thought I couldn't do. Like that cool light on the East Street Bridge when a young man almost ended it. I was right there, wasn't scared a bit, and I held to pull him through. Looking at me now, you might not know it. Oh, looking at me now, you might not know it. I've had my moments. I've had my moments. I've had my moments. I've had my moments.